It started about 2.5 years ago, and the reason it started was that there was a lot of controversy, as you and your listeners know, in central Wisconsin, having to do with high capacity wells, water levels. Were the wells having an effect on lakes and streams and wetlands? Were the wells pumping too much? Were the lakes and streams really low? And how did it all work together? And there was a lot of finger pointing, as you said, on both sides of whose fault it was, and or was it climate change or weather patterns? And so the DNR came to us and came to our survey, and we cooperate with the USGS quite often, asked us to do some sort of study to look at the scientific relationships between groundwater, surface water, and high-capacity well pumping. Mm-hmm. And so we initiated that study by building a groundwater flow model, which is a computer model that simulates groundwater flow and relations between groundwater, surface water, and wells. And it does it in a computer format that's just looks at the hydraulics and the equations that govern groundwater flow. And so it takes sort of the human element out of it in a way. And then we focused on the Little Plover River because, first of all, it's right in the heart of the controversy area. There was evidence that the Little Plover had been lower than historically it had been. And there was also a lot of information about the river from previous studies that had been done up to 40 years ago. And so that was a good place to start.
It does seem like the Little Plover River has gotten a lot of attention from the scientific community. Mike, let's talk a little bit about how the federal side of things decided to be engaged. Mike Feenan is along with us, like Ken said, from the national side of the Geologic Survey. Talk to me a little bit. Is the Little Plover River unique in some way, or is it just a matter of so many people paying attention to it that gets it the attention, or what is it about that?
Well, like Ken said, part of why we were asked to work on this area is there is a long history of studying the Little Plover River. And it's a place where some of the relationships between the way that well pumping interacts with surface water, interacts with streams, was first discovered, 40, 50 years ago. And the USGS has been part of that all along. But from the federal perspective, we work on areas where there's also a need for kind of new development of tools and techniques. And one of the things that we were asked to look at here was a management tool so that all the stakeholders on all sides of the issue could use them. So building the model is one thing that gives us the ability to simulate the system and maybe make forecasts. But then there's optimization techniques that we can use where we actually use that to try to maintain a certain, to look at how well pumping can be managed such that you maintain a certain level of flow in the river. Mm-hmm. So the federal government is interested in that. We've worked in Nebraska and Massachusetts, some other places doing similar things. And this was a perfect opportunity to do that.
All right. Well, it's a 3-year study that's now been concluded. Let's talk a little bit about the results then, Ken. I'll start number one with the idea that the Little Plover River is going away, that it's going to be drying up. We've seen high capacity wells in that community for many, many years, and there's always been the accusation that the Little Plover River is going to dry up. In the 3 years that you've dedicated to that survey, what conclusions have you and Mike drawn?
Well, certainly it's not going to dry up completely. There has been a few dry years where parts of it indeed did go dry a few years ago. Now this year, we've had a couple of wet years now, so it's probably looking pretty good right now. I think the main thing that we found out was we were able to, again, show with modeling what a lot of people already suspected, that indeed the high-capacity wells are having an impact on the river. And, of course, that impact is greater during dry periods of time, when in the summer when they are irrigating. That's when most of the wells are using water, and that's also when the river tends to naturally be the lowest. So that's the critical time. We're not so worried about the wet times like right now when things are high anyway. It's those critical times. So that was probably our main finding. As Mike said, the main objective of this project was to build a tool, a system for analyzing future wells, for analyzing the river, for analyzing other land use changes that might occur, because the pumping wells is not the only thing going on. Of course, there's been different cropping patterns, there's different weather, different other land uses, and all those things can be simulated too to see how those impact the river.
Mm-hmm. Where does the Little Plover River get its water from? Is it artisanal coming from underground, or is it coming from another watershed area? I mean, how water moves in Wisconsin is a tricky business. That's what you guys have been called on to help us better understand. Where does the Little Plover River get its water from?
Well, basically, there's recharge falling as rain in the area. And characteristic of this part of the country, the groundwater system is really shallow and very well connected to the lakes and streams. So water is falling on the ground, moving in through the groundwater system locally in a pretty small area, making its way out to the stream. And so this is exactly why irrigation and other wells, other high capacity wells that are used, have an impact on the stream, because they basically intercept some of that water on its way from the surface out to the river.
So when you take a look at the number of high capacity wells that we've got specifically in that area, and maybe you want to explain how far out you were looking in relation to the Little Plover River, are we already overcapacity on high capacity wells that have been allowed, or is it a matter of mitigating any future development or putting technology in place where those high caps are being used to more efficiently run those pumps? What are you thinking that way, Mike?
Well, it depends on what the standard is for how much flow is acceptable. And there have been times, like Ken said, that the river has gone dry in small areas. Briefly, in wet years, there's more water available. What we showed was the years that we looked at, the water level in the river was below what's called the public rights flow. So there is an established flow rate. And by that metric, yeah, there's probably a little bit too much water use to maintain that level. Mm-hmm. So part of the focus of our study was looking at how much would you have to back off on water use to maintain that level.
Now, we know that there's a bill down at the State House looking for the governor's signature that would allow high-capacity wells that are already in existence to be reconstructed, taken care of, if necessary, rights transferred if they want to sell the property. So that is a pending issue we want to keep in the back of our minds. So, Ken, how many wells were you looking at around the Little Plover River?
Well, our model covered the Little Plover watershed, which is about 20 square miles, but it also went to a larger area than that, something like probably 40 square miles. There are something like 400 wells in that area, and we simulated every one of them. So that was quite a bit of water use.
Yeah.
And right in, right near the Little Plover River, there's probably, 30 or 40 wells, Mike?
Yeah.
So when we say wells, are those private wells or are those all high capacity?
These are high capacity wells, and a high capacity well is defined as any well that can pump more than 70 gallons a minute. Although most of these wells, when they're operating, pump far more than that. They may pump something like 1,000 gallons a minute.
Right.
But the other thing to keep in mind is those wells are only used in the summertime. They're usually used in June, July, and August. Mm-hmm. There are also a few municipal wells. The Village of Plover, for example, has a few wells, and those are used. Those are also high capacity wells, and they run pretty much year round. So
sure.
It's we don't want to cast all the blame on one kind of well. Water is used for many purposes, and that's important to keep in mind.
Well, and it's a beautiful part of the countryside. I know that during testimony, there were a lot of landowners, homeowners that were saying, this is where I want to retire. So population hubs, Plover may not necessarily catch a lot of attention for its thriving population, but did you notice that there are more communities that are growing in size, maybe drawing more water just for the people that live around there?
Well, there's certainly some development there, but frankly, the low capacity private wells, like an individual home would have, don't really use very much water, and many of them are on site septic systems, so a lot of that water gets recharged right back. So they have a very minimal impact. It's mostly the high capacity wells that we are worrying about here.
That voice, Ken Bradbury. He's with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. And the other voice in that conversation, Mike Finan, a USGS hydrologist that was also one of the report authors. Now, listen, this is a 3-year study, so it is an in-depth look at the Little Plover River, how water moves around that watershed, what high-capacity well placement and pumping have done to the Little Plover River's flow. It is an emotional subject. I want you to know, if you want to read the entire three-year study summation, you can go to usgs.gov, and you'll find it under their scientific reports there. Both of these scientists, Ken and Michael, quick to point out, they hope that the state and federal scene will continue to dedicate monies towards independent research like their own, concentrating on the Little Plover River and how water moves every year. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.